Next case is 00-1700, International Business Machines versus James J. Lawrence, Thomas Zano, Tax Commissioner. Mr. Engel.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Mark Engel, and it's my privilege to be here on behalf of International Business Machines Corporation today in this appeal from the Board of Tax Appeals. In its decision, the Board of Tax Appeals ruled that the appellant IBM was not entitled to a refund of corporation franchise taxes paid with respect to the tax year 1993. As a result, that gives rise to the issue that we've raised here before this court of where an issue is raised in response to an assessment pursuant to a petition for reassessment that, if successful, results in an overpayment of tax, must the taxpayer file a separate refund claim in order to obtain the refund of that overpayment?
Is this a form over substance case in your view?
Yes, Your Honor, it is. And the facts are very straightforward. I don't believe they're contested here. IBM filed its original return in 1993. Pursuant to the law, it included certain reserves in the calculation of its net worth and excluded certain other reserves. Among those reserves that was excluded was a debit balance in its deferred tax account. On audit, the agent added back certain reserves that had been originally excluded, but did not add back the deferred tax account. And the reason for that was, at that time, the policy of the department was if there was a credit balance in that account, it would be added back, but if there was a debit balance in the account, it would not be added in. And since there was a debit balance, the agent did not add that back in. On petition, IBM claimed that the debit balance in the deferred tax account should be used to offset any increase in the other reserves that were added in as a result of the assessment. Now, while the case was pending before the tax commissioner, the Board of Tax Appeals issued a decision in USX Corporation in which the board ruled that doesn't matter if you have a debit balance or a credit balance in your deferred tax account, the statute's plain, you have to consider that balance in computing your net worth. At that time, pursuant to 573311, the taxpayer raised in writing the objection that not only should this debit balance be used to offset the other reserves that were added in, but in fact, if you fully allow that debit balance to be computed, there should be a refund of corporation franchise tax paid.
At that point in time, had the taxpayer separately asked for a refund, would you have been within time or without time?
They would have been outside the statute at that time, Your Honor.
So, shouldn't that answer the case?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe it does, and here's the reason why. When an assessment is issued, there's only one avenue to contest that assessment. You file a petition pursuant to 573311. That statute specifically provides that you may raise additional issues if you do so in writing, which was done here in this case. At that point, it wouldn't have served any issue to file a refund claim because you can't contest an assessment by filing a refund claim. We believe that the purpose of the refund statute is when the taxpayer discovers that there is an overpayment and wishes to raise that issue in the first instance, the way to do that is by filing a refund claim. We think that's supported by the various cases that were decided by the board and also argued in the briefs. In each of those cases, there was no assessment, there was no petition for reassessment filed, so what was a taxpayer to do to raise the issue? You file a separate refund claim. That's not the situation we have here. What we have here is an assessment that was issued based on the reserves used to compute net worth.
Would it be fair to say it's what we're talking about, just keep qualifying it, that this was a deficiency assessment? Does that narrow it, that and keeps it within? The argument seems to be that, opposite of yours, that the when you look at it, that this statute is related only to deficiency assessments, And then it speaks about the taxes paid with regard to the deficiency assessment rather than all taxes paid.
Your Honor, I think there's two responses to that. First of all, I think that does frame the arrow a little, the issue a bit too narrowly. I think once an assessment is issued on a specific issue, in this case, the reserves to be included in net worth, it raises the question of what is the correct tax first, and if there's a deficiency, this is a way to collect that deficiency. What we're suggesting here is that by raising the petition, we've challenged what is that correct level of tax. What is the amount of tax that should be out there?
And that's the difference. If you say you're challenging the correct level of tax versus you're objecting to the deficiency assessment and have to pay tax with it in order to get a refund of the portion paid with that. I mean, it's the framing of the issue that maybe makes a difference. Yours is much broader.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, I think it is. I don't know if I'd characterize it as much, but I think it is broader.
Somewhat.
The second response, though, to your question is, you indicated at the last part of your question that if you pay the assessment and you're successful, you get to have that refunded back, and that certainly is provided in the last paragraph of the statute. But I think what's important to note is that the last paragraph of the statute says the refund shall be issued as provided in 5733.12.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you look at 5733.12, one of the provisions in there is you have to file a claim for refund.
Yeah.
And yet the department's practice has been, if you pay an assessment, you don't have to file a refund claim. We're going to go ahead and refund that. Why is there a difference? The statute says pursuant to the refund statute. Why do you not have to file a refund claim in that situation? And IBM in this situation does have to file a refund claim. It doesn't make sense.
Your argument has a lot of fairness components. What bothered me when I read the statute was it says on a form provided by the commissioner. It couldn't be more specific, Mr.
Chairman. Your Honor, that's what 5733.12 says. You're exactly right. And that was my response to the Justice's second part of her question is that when you pay pursuant to an assessment, you don't have to file a refund claim.
Yeah, but they tell you in 11 how you get your refund, and it's in 12 they tell you you have to file it on a form provided by the commissioner.
That's correct.
And that wasn't done here.
Your Honor, that's right. But two things I would say with that. First of all, we wish to point out the inconsistency. As was done in this case, if we had paid the deficiency, if IBM had paid that, the department's practice is they would have gotten the money back without filing a refund claim. They wouldn't have had to file the form that the commissioner required. And that's our first question. Why the inconsistency? That doesn't make sense.
Well, counsel, the only money that would have gotten back was the assessment money, though it would not be the additional funds that you're seeking here.
That's correct, Your Honor. But again,
on the issue of the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals that then prompted your client to believe they were entitled to an even greater refund, prior to that decision, what was the status of the tax return for that year? Was there an opportunity for a refund as a taxpayer? Had IBM just made a mistake, or was this refund that you're indicating should be in play only as a result of a new decision of the Board of Tax Appeals?
Your Honor, at the time the petition was filed, I was not involved with the taxpayer, and so I can't tell you why they may or may not have done what they did. I can tell you that the issuance of the USX decision change the department's existing policy. As I mentioned, the department's policy up to that point was, in fact, I misstated it earlier.
But wouldn't that make a difference in this case? In other words, if the Board of Tax Appeals now, at some point in time, decides the case, that means you make certain calculations. The taxpayer makes certain calculations differently. But for tax year 93, that decision is far enough removed in time that there is no opportunity to go back and amend and seek a refund. Shouldn't that issue just
be off the board then?
No, Your Honor, it shouldn't, and here's why. First of all, the issue of the reserves to be included in net worth was the issue on which the assessment was based, first of all. Secondly, when the petition was filed, and it was timely filed, the issue of the debit balance in the reserve tax account was specified, admittedly as an offset, but it was raised in the petition. And thirdly, as is permitted by 573311, when the BTA issued its decision in USX, IBM Corporation added an additional basis to contest the assessment in writing as permitted by the statute, and that was you've got to consider the full debit balance in this deferred tax account in computing the reserves that are subject to the net worth tax. And so we believe that the issue was preserved in that case. This isn't a situation where IBM has raised a tangential issue. For example, it says you've assessed tax on increased net worth, but we think the property factor should be modified, which would result in a refund. That's not this case. That's what the General Motors case was. The assessment was based on one issue. Taxpayer tried to raise a completely new issue to offset it, and this court said, no, you can't do that. That's not this case. This isn't a case where there was no assessment, there was no pending litigation, and a taxpayer untimely filed a claim for refund, which is some of the other cases that were involved in the argued in the briefs. This is a case where the issue was the subject of the assessment, the issue was petitioned in the reassessment, the issue was preserved in writing prior to the tax commissioner's decision. That issue was preserved in this case, and that's why we think that it was not necessary to file a separate refund claim to under the form.
Counsel, maybe I'll put this in too simplistic terms, but you had an issue that you raised, and let's just throw these figures out. It, when you look at the whole issue, you're due back in taxes $100,000, but the assessment is only for $60,000. Under the state's holding, you only get the 60, even though everyone agrees you're entitled to the 100, because you didn't file a separate action for what might be any difference in that assessment.
I believe that's a fair characterization of the issues, and that our position is that where we've contested the assessment and we have properly raised the issue, why should we have to file the separate refund claim?
You get the whole 100 back in the same action rather than be artificially limited to the 60.
Right, especially in light of the fact that a form is not required to get the 60,000 back, in your example. If you've paid that, that comes back automatically.
Our challenge to produce that result that seems fair is to somehow get around what the General Assembly has said you have to do to get the refund, isn't it?
No, Your Honor, I don't think it does. I think it's an issue that wasn't argued in the briefs, but if I may address this,
sure,
to respond to your question. This court and many other cases have talked about what goes to the core of procedural efficiency as to whether it's a jurisdictional issue or not. And if you think about it, the reason why perhaps the form must be used by the tax commissioner is in order to frame the issue and explain the basis for your refund claim. If you don't do that, the commissioner doesn't know what your basis is, doesn't know how to calculate the refund, and as this court has ruled, the commissioner is under no duty in the first instance to say, oh, by the way, taxpayer, we owe you some money back. That's the purpose served by the form. Well, that's exactly the same purpose that was served in this case, and when we filed a petition for reassessment, when we raised the issue in writing, and when we presented evidence to the Board of Tax Appeals as to what the issue was. It served exactly the same purpose. And so I think in response to your question, perhaps the way to look at that is substantial compliance. The form was filed. It was done in a timely manner as allowed by law. The commissioner was put on notice. The taxpayer provided the information to calculate it. What more needs to be done? That's why the board's decision is erroneous, and this court should reverse that decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Engel. Mr. Farron.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I believe Mr. Engel fairly stated the question presented in this case. May a corporation obtain a refund of franchise tax paid with its report, voluntarily paid with its report,
without complying with the procedure specifically prescribed by the General Assembly in Revised Code Section 5733.12b. That provision contains language that is mandatory. It states that an application to obtain a refund of franchise tax overpaid shall be filed with the tax commissioner on a form prescribed by the commissioner within the 3-year statute of limitations period. That language contains no exceptions or exclusions. The provision goes on to state what the authority of the tax commissioner is with respect to granting refunds. It states that the tax commissioner shall determine the amount of the refund due on the filing of the refund claim. That language is very specific. IBM admits it did not file a refund claim in this case. That should end the issue. The General Assembly decides how refund claims may be filed. That is an action against the state. Those types of provisions are to be strictly construed.
Counselor, though, when you go in and do an audit and you're seeking an assessment or you're doing an audit and you're focusing on a particular area, once you're into that, don't all the statutes of limitations with respect to that issue, they're told, as long as you open it before your deadline, you can resolve it years later, right?
It does not, the issuance of an assessment does not toll the statute of limitations for filing a refund claim.
No. I'm saying you've only got so long that you can go to IBM and say we want to examine 1993.
Yes.
Right. So, but once you start that, you don't have to complete the examination or resolve the issues that you put in play within that.
Yes, we do.
You have to have it.
The assessment must be issued. The assessment of the tax liability must be issued within that statute of limitations period, and that's it. We can't expand that assessment after that time period.
So you not only have to open this up, but you have to close it up.
That's correct. And the statute of limitations is on the issuance of the assessment.
Right.
And I would point out, if the taxpayer files a refund claim within the statute of limitations, and while that's pending, but after the limitation period for an assessment is run, the commissioner can't go in and assess any additional tax. But the limitation period on each provision, assessments, and refunds is fixed. It's not tolled. It works both ways. If a taxpayer believes it has overpaid a tax on its report, it files a refund claim. That's what IBM should have done. That's what many taxpayers did based on the USX pending case.
Okay, and here, at what point in time, how did this change affect? I mean, the end result was that there was an offset for the assessment.
That's correct.
Right.
That's correct.
And that all happened within the statute of limitations.
The assessment was issued within the statute of limitations. While the assessment proceed, there was a petition for reassessment filed by IBM. During the course of that petition for reassessment, they raised as an offset this debit balance.
Okay. And so they're within time on that issue.
On the assessment.
Because that's, while that might occur outside the time for a request for refund, it's within time because there's a procedure once you assess for them to come back.
That's correct. These are two very separate procedures by two different statutes. You have an assessment, and then the procedures on that where you can challenge it, raise issues, and ask the tax commissioner to correct that assessment. A separate provision is a refund provision that has to be instituted by the taxpayer within the time period.
For what they've requested, that's within time because that's in response to the assessment, they're beyond the statute for refund.
That's precisely correct, Your Honor. I point out, during the course of the audit, the tax agent notified IBM and its subsidiaries, because they were auditing a combined return, which included a lot of subsidiaries. They notified all of them if they believed they had a refund claim based on the results of the audit. They need to file a refund claim, and in fact, as we pointed out in our brief and as included in the second supplement, several of these subsidiaries did file refund claims. They certainly were aware of it.
So they would have, I guess, a petition for a reassessment and a petition pursuant to point 11 filed simultaneously for a refund and reassessment could be on separate tracks, I guess, in the commission.
That's correct, and often they are. Now, if it's more than likely, if they file a petition for reassessment, also file a refund claim, even close in time, they're going to be considered together if the issues that are raised in both of them are the same. But the fact is they have to file the refund claim.
Does that not assist Mr. Engel's argument that if they're two separate filings, or they're brought together and decisions made on one on the issue presented by both the filings, that...
It may be, but the fact is the General Assembly set forth the mandatory procedure for claiming refunds. And in this case, even if you accept that later letter as constituting a refund claim, it was made, I believe it was a year and a half to the day after the extended statute of limitations for filing the refund claim had run. And it's notable that IBM and the commissioner entered into an agreement extending the time period for either assessing or filing refund claims. Certainly IBM was aware that if it had a dispute with respect to the tax it paid with its report, it needed to file a refund claim. Mr. Engel points to Revised Code Section 573311F, which is a provision in the assessment statute which states that the commissioner may or shall refund an amount paid on an assessment that's determined to be illegal or erroneous. And that's correct. But what that statute says is the General Assembly has specified the only situation in which a refund may be obtained other than through the filing of a refund claim under 5733.12. And that, contrary to what Mr. Engel states, that makes perfect sense. You were assessed the statute in 573311E actually requires the corporation assessed to pay some or all of the assessment based on certain circumstances. If you pay the assessment, the statute simply says if that assessment is modified or reversed or reduced, you're going to get the amount that you paid on it over and above that amount back without going through a separate refund provision. That is the only provision, however, that allows a refund to be obtained other than through the statutory prescribed method in 5733.12. Mr. Engel suggests that in an assessment proceeding, the commissioner should correct the amount of the tax paid. Well, that's simply not what Revised Code Section 5733.11 says. Justice Cook correctly noted that an assessment is a finding of a deficiency in the amount of tax a corporation pays. The commissioner goes in and determines you underpaid your franchise tax liability with your franchise tax report and issues a deficiency assessment. That deficiency assessment can be challenged by the taxpayer by the filing of a petition for reassessment under 573311. 573311 then goes on to state that upon the filing of a petition for reassessment, the tax commissioner may make such correction to the assessment as he deems proper. The commissioner's authority under 11 is to correct the assessment. That does not correct the total amount of tax due. It doesn't correct the franchise tax report filed. His authority is solely to correct the assessment. In this case, the commissioner corrected the assessment. In fact, he canceled the assessment completely based on the offset for the debit balance in the deferred taxes. Nothing in 573311 authorizes the tax commissioner to go any further and to grant a refund of taxes overpaid with the franchise tax report. The Board of Tax Appeals on review in this case agreed with the tax commissioner's position.
Mr. Farron, I'm not sure I follow why you say that the, you know, this repayment of the portion overpaid is part of the deficiency, you know, a response to the deficiency assessment, and the taxpayer then is permitted to pay it and get a refund. Given the language that it says, you know, the commissioner may, you know, that portion may refund that portion paid in the amount of the overpayment, and then it says as provided by 12.2.12.
I believe that's simply a reference to how the commissioner makes the payment. He has to certify it to the to the treasurer and the OBM.
That's why you, that's how you say that it's an exception. It's that it doesn't require the filing.
That's correct. You don't have to have a separate procedure, nor do you have to file a refund claim for that amount within a three-year statute of limitations period.
The reference to 12 doesn't encompass the form.
That's correct. That's correct, and it also.
How do you get? I mean, I hear that, but it is a general reference to point.
It's a general reference. That the commissioner's position has always been that if we assess, and you pay a portion of the assessment. In fact, you're as I indicated, oftentimes they're mandated to pay a portion of the assessment. But if you pay it on the assessment, and that's what 11 actually says, and you are successful in part or in full in your petition for reassessment, the commissioner will pay back that amount. I do see the general reference, but that's certainly how I've understood it to be and how it's been applied.
Okay.
The board's decision is not only fully supported by the plain language of 573.11 and 573.12, but it's also in accord with this court's decisions in Wright Aeronautical and Lancaster Colony. In both of those cases, the courts refused to allow a refund to be obtained through an assessment provision. Wright Aeronautical dealt with the personal property tax. Lancaster Colony dealt with the franchise tax. In each situation, however, the assessment provisions and refund provisions are essentially the same. They're separate provisions established by the General Assembly, one for assessments and contesting assessments, one for a taxpayer to claim a refund on taxes that they believe they erroneously paid when they file their returns or reports. In fact, Lancaster Colony is very similar, and as the court pointed out in its decision, what the taxpayer was attempting to do, because it knew it hadn't filed a refund claim timely, it said, well, the commissioner, in considering our petition for reassessment, referred to at the time as an application for review and correction, the commissioner reviewed it and agreed that we had overpaid a tax and therefore offset the assessment by the amount down to the full amount of the assessment. So because he understood that this issue was erroneously determined by the commissioner initially, the commissioner should have gone further and not just reduced the assessment to zero, but should have granted a refund, notwithstanding the fact that there had been no timely refund claim. This court rejected that argument and affirmed the board's decision that a petition for assessment in a petition for reassessment proceeding, only the assessment is at issue. A refund claim or a refund cannot be paid through that proceeding. Wright Aeronautical held the same thing with respect to the similar assessment and refund provisions found in the personal property tax chapters. The commissioner's decision and the board's decision is fully supported by those two decisions, and it's fully supported by the plain language of the statutes. The commissioner had no authority to grant a refund. He had no authority to do anything more than correct the assessment. He corrected the assessment. In fact, he canceled it. There was nothing left for him to do. He had no authority to grant the refund, and the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals so holding should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Farron. Mr. Engel, you've saved about a minute and a half.
Thank you. I think I have just two comments in rebuttal. First, I think, Justice Cook, your question that you asked both me and Mr. Farron really cuts to the nub of this case. There is a general reference to 5711 or 573312 in the assessment statute. Mr. Farron says, well, that really only means that it's the manner in which you do it. 573311F doesn't say that. It says as provided in 573312. It seems to me that either the statute applies in both cases or it doesn't apply in both cases. And what we're suggesting,
Mr. Farron offers a way that it does apply, but it's applying in part.
That's
not
true.
Necessitating the filing of a petition.
That's true, and we're taking the contrary side to that, that by applying it in part, if you will, we sustain our position.
Mm-hmm.
We just simply want that to be consistent. The second point is with respect to the Lancaster Colony and Wright Aeronautical decisions. If you look at the Lancaster Colony decision very carefully, two things. First of all, the Board of Tax Appeals in that case did indeed rule that on a petition for reassessment, it will not allow a refund. But there was also a refund claim that was not timely filed in Lancaster Colony that the board disallowed. And only that issue, only the refund claim was appealed to this court. Read that decision carefully. As far as the first issue goes in Lancaster Colony, that was reversed, not directly, but in effect by the Marathon Oil decision, where Marathon, as we've cited in our brief, specifically asked for a refund. The board's decision specifically remanded it to determine the refund, and loose language or not, that's the board's holding in Marathon. So that's why Lancaster Colony doesn't apply. Wright Aeronautical we've addressed in our brief. We would ask this court to find that the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals is both unreasonable and unlawful and reverse that decision with an order to grant the refund that IBM deserves. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Engel. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.
All rise.